irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro, and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. Thanks especially to Monique Caravello, who introduced me to my guest for tonight. My guest is Steve Freeman. And interesting guitar player, very good guitar player. We're going to hear some cuts of him from his last album, Surfside, which is a very cool album. But also, too, he's an educator. He went to the Berklee School of Music, and we'll talk about that. And he also was a student and a teacher, if I'm correct, at Musicians Institute. And he founded the Atlanta Institute of Music. And he's working with a new group called Achieve Music, which is an interesting online program, very innovative. And we're going to get into that. I was originally going to do it all on Achieve, and we will talk with that in depth. But he sent me a bunch of cuts from his album, and they're just so cool. I have to talk more about that. So I want to welcome to the show Steve. Steve, welcome for coming on the show.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
This is it's a real treat. It's great. I mean, the playing. We're gonna go into your background in a minute, and I want you to kind of explain, where you came from and so people get an idea what's going on. But I'm gonna open up real quick and start immediately with a song that you gave me, and this is called "Attack of the Flannel People," and this is from his album Surfside, and just check this out. It's just really, really cool. Hang on. That is a cool cut. Now, I just got to go right into it. What were you using?
What's funny about that cut, before I even start talking about it, that's one of the old tunes that I actually, when I was doing the record Surfside, I was so busy and I had to get it out. I've been working on it too long. And so that is a cut that was done some years ago, but it was remixed and put on the record, which is one of my favorite songs that I had written for that. But that goes way back. That's a Mesa Boogie studio preamp with an American Bill Lawrence Stratocaster.
And it had wow, that's a Strat.
Yeah, it's a Strat with a 59 PAF humbucker in it that I got out of an old 335 years ago.
Wow.
I know, it's crazy.
I could have sworn that was a 335, but God. That humbucker fakes me out. Like I was telling my I have friends with me tonight. I just want to welcome also Caroline, Rosalind, and Doug are hanging out with me. And awesome. I've told them before, I get surprised. I mean, I think it's this, and it's, you know, sometimes today is another one. I could have sworn that was a Gibson, but it's a great tone. That is that's a great sound, and it's a
and
tight.
On that same song, on certain parts of it, I actually use an old PV Special amp.
Oh, wow.
Those were really big back in the day. And I had actually taken the head out and put it in a rack, you know, with a, I forgot what, you know, delay or what reverb I was using. But that's what some of that is. I believe the head is that. I believe it's this PV Special. And I think on the solo sections, it's the Mesa Boogie, the studio preamp.
Well, that rhythm guitar with the chorusing on it is a nice, clean, tight sound. The whole rhythm track is just really tight. Great, great stuff. Just really.
And some great players on there, friends that I've known for many, many years. They're just awesome musicians.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your background. And starting with you originally were at the Berklee College of Music, right?
Yes, that's where I went there straight from the hills of Tennessee up to Boston, and it was a culture shock, but a great experience. Jim Kelly was my guitar instructor up there, and he did wonders for me. I mean, he was one of the more he was into Steely Dan and that type of stuff, so he kind of, you know, connected with me, and I connected with him when I was there. But it was, you know, I think there were 900 guitar players at that time. Lord knows how many there are now. You know,
wow.
I know.
So how many years were you at Berklee?
Two.
And then you came out to L.A. to the Musicians Institute?
Well, I went on and started playing in a band called the Ozone Rangers. And we basically played a lot in the Southeast, but in Tennessee, and some great stories behind those days. But I did that. We did that for a summer, and then I believe at that time I had picked up Guitar Player magazine, and John Scofield was on there, and I saw another article in there. It was talking about Musicians Institute, or at that time Guitar Institute of Technology, and I said, you know, that sounds really cool. I'd really like to, you know, to go out, and so I made plans to go, you know, out there to GIT, and which was probably the best move I think I made, because I love Berklee, but just the whole vibe at Musicians Institute, it was just more of a family vibe because it was a small school.
Right.
And you had these amazing teachers. I mean, when I was in orientation watching Howard Alden play and, you know, Don Mock play, and just blowing my mind. And then, you know, you've had Doug Perkins on the show. I know Doug's a good friend of mine. And Doug was sitting in front of me. I remember, and he's playing all this crazy stuff, and I'm like, what am I doing here? So it was, Berklee was a culture shock, but MI or GIT at that time was definitely just they had that cassette called The Monsters Are Here, and it's definitely the case because it was smoking. And
now,
I just
when you were there, was Howard still alive? Was he there?
Howard was there, yeah.
Yeah.
Howard was there.
Because I've had Les Wise on, and Ron Eshte have been on the show here too, and they were teachers. I think they were both teachers from the old Guitar Institute.
They were. I was teaching there right along with both of those guys. So.
Okay. Because I was when I was at SC, I went to SC with Duke Miller in his studio guitar program, and he was best friends with Howard. So he would always tell us what you guys were doing over there, and they exchanged a lot of ideas on teaching and stuff. It was very
right.
But I always thought the Guitar Institute was interesting because it was set up so you could make it at your own schedule. They had the tapes, so you could listen to the tapes and stuff. And I thought that was kind of cool, because where we were in a more of a formal, you know, school situation where you had to show up at a certain time and there was a class and whatever, I thought that was kind of a cool thing. But
yeah, it was the whole Howard's approach to learning and how he broke everything down. And we had these old style, we called them, I guess, learning stations. I forgot what they were called, but they had an egg timer in them, mm-hmm. and a cassette deck. And, you know, you could slow things down, and you would actually practice this for so many minutes, and you'd have a lab instructor walk around and I remember Jamie Findlay. You might have had Jamie on the show. I don't know, but unbelievable guitar player. He was my lab instructor at that time, and but just that whole that type of learning and really focused, and it had to be because I mean you're there a year, you know, to cram in, you know, 10 years of stuff, you know. So.
No, that's cool. And then you ended up teaching there, right?
I did. When I graduated, myself and Doug Perkins and Bruce Buckingham started the summer program there. And so shortly after the summer program was over, I was hired to – Jamie actually left, and I took over his position at MI when I was there, you know, gosh, 6 years or so.
Right. And that, so when you were teaching, is that when you met Monique?
I've known Monique for a long, long time. I can't remember. Getting older, my memory really sucks.
Because she was one of the first girls, I think, that was.
Yeah, I think she was in the summer session, if I'm not mistaken. So I was teaching there at the summer session at that time when I first met her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Monique, you have to let us know what happened, what the story is. But that's interesting. So you were teaching, and what were you doing? What was the curriculum that you were teaching at? Were you teaching a specific style, or were you just in general music theory?
I was doing a lot of the reading and the ear training stuff. And then, of course, I was a private person. I mean, you know, I did I don't even forgot what they called them at that time. But we basically sat in a room and had students come in for 30 minutes. And we were kind of their teacher counselors through the program, actually even – Paul Gilbert, Paul Gilbert's kind of band or his coach, I guess. But at that time, we were just working on curriculum stuff. I didn't know what Paul really played like. And, you know, I remember seeing him on stage and I'm like, my jaw dropped to the floor. You know, I didn't realize that guy was just so amazing. But that, you know, so basically it was a lot of the private stuff and then reading and ear training, which was great. I loved doing that.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you were touring with the Ozone Rangers, and back in Berkeley, what was your rig? What were you using back then?
Oh my God! Let's see. I know I had a Strat. I had an Ibanez, one of the solid kind of artists. Mm-hmm. And for my amp, I was using a Mesa Boogie. I had one of the Carlos Rios and all those guys. I forgot which one it was. It was just a 112 bamboo kind of grill kind of thing. So I used that. I don't think I used any effects whatsoever. It was just guitar and amps.
Straight effects.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. I had no concept of really tone back then.
Well, no, actually, I have to admit, I mean, I went through a lot of effects, and then there was a certain time where I would just play with just the guitar and the amp. And it was amazing the tone you can get. Out of, you know, the challenge was what you could get out of just with your hands and just playing. So it was kind of interesting. I totally get that. That's a cool thing.
We were playing maybe, you know, some at that time, you know, we were playing, it was in disco era pretty much, you know. Yeah. So we were still playing like Clapton stuff. We were playing Steely Dan. We were playing, you know, that kind of stuff. So it was fun. And we would rehearse in Kentucky and on this lake, and it was just a great time to be young and to be playing music and having a good time. So that's
Let me play another clip. Let me play the title one.
Okay.
Surfside, and tell me what you're using here. It sounds like it's a really fully blown out sound. And let's take a listen, then you can tell me what you were doing here. This is the title clip, Surfside. Great tone. That's great tone. So what were you using on that?
A pig nose. I'm just joking. No, actually, it's a custom audio head. one of the OD100s. Scott Henderson's a good friend of mine, and we like the same players, you know, Jeff Beck and John Schofield and those guys, and Scott would always help me since I had such a sucky sound usually. And so it's an OD100. At that time, he'd also sent me a Marshall cabinet that he had built, I think, in somewhere in North Carolina, and I put some greenbacks in there and wired it up. He had helped me do that. So it was that, and I think I had a separate cabinet. We were recording in this house, and I had a cabinet in the attic with a mic on it. I had a cabinet down on the floor, and I was playing I have a Tom Anderson Cobra is what I was using on that one.
What's the model? Was it the Tom Anderson what? I'm sorry, I didn't hear it.
A Cobra?
Cobra.
It's like the Tele style. It has two humbuckers in it.
Oh, okay. So there's humbuckers.
There's humbuckers in it. It's a quilted top, really pretty guitar. But I don't take it out that often. It's just one of those kind of guitars. I don't even want to get a dent in it, you know, so I don't even play it that much.
Oh, okay. But you still have that one.
Oh, yeah. I still have it.
That's a great sound. It's got a really good tone. Now, let me ask you. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, I said one of the SC70 Boss effects units too. That's what I was using on that.
Oh, okay.
And those old things, you know.
I remember
old timey things.
Yeah. No, but they had the sound. That's a great tone though. That was a really good sound. And did you change pickups in the lead? Did you go to the bridge pickup and then go over back to the neck pickup? Because there was like a little difference in the tone. But it must be your playing.
I don't think so. It might have been how we mixed it. I don't know, but I think it was all on the treble pickup with the tone rolled off. You know, I always roll off the tone to about 8 or 7.
Oh, okay. All right.
So it's not very bright. I always do that.
It's got a nice rich tone to it. No, it's a very rich sound.
What I did notice to later in, it gets a little thin just in some parts of the solo, but that one was pretty much done. I don't know if we did that track live. I think I just played, I overdubbed the solo, you know, after everybody put their parts down. I think that was the last thing I put on.
Yeah. Well, I noticed that you have a lot of brass on this album, which is interesting. And I presume you did all, did you do all your own arrangements for that?
No, actually, I would love to take credit for that. But Brian Lopes, just a master sax player, he went to New York and lived up there for quite a while and came back to Atlanta. And he's just a master guy. And I've used Brian since the 80s on some things and told him I was doing this record. And he came in and this was for him, I think it was maybe our experience. Mm-hmm. he's very, very good, but he wrote out I told him what I wanted, what I was listening for, and the heads of course I wrote out, but he did the arrangements for the different for the trumpet and for sax.
Mm. Well, let me play I'm going to play another clip. I think this is the one where you double with him.
Okay.
It's Mouth Breather 2, if I'm correct, if that's the correct name.
Or Mouth Breather. Okay.
Is it just called Mouth Breather?
Yeah, it's just called Mouth.
Because he sent me MP3s, and so there's numbers. I can't always tell if it's part of the name. But here, check this out. It's really good, and I love this rhythm guitar. There's a rhythm guitar groove in here that's really cool. We'll talk about that and also the guitar. So here's Mouth Breather. Some pretty tight stuff there going on. Now, how did that one come? Well, also too, I want to know what you used on that for the rhythm and for the lead.
That was my Strat. I got a John Sir, just a gold regular vintage Strat, and it has I think these DiMarzio blues pickups in the neck and in the middle pickup, and then I have a Seymour Duncan side by side humbucker in the bridge. Mm-hmm. So that's what I use pretty much on that one, the same setup. I mean, it was with a custom audio amp. I might have used, if I can remember, a different delay on that one. I believe it was, oh my goodness, I'm thinking back, maybe it was one of those Line 6 delays
right.
for that one. But that one turned out to be more in the middle of more of a, you know, like a jazz minor blues kind of solo. And so I wanted it to be a little cleaner.
Right.
But with the rhythm still, I wanted to have that, you know, a funky rhythm to it as well. So I don't think I changed guitars on it. I think it was all the...
So you're using the same guitar for both the lead and for that.
Yeah,
because you get this really, it's a nice glassy type of rhythm. It's got that real glassy type of Strat sound that's really nice.
Well, you know something, now that I remember, I did use the Tom Anderson on the solo part. The Strat was on all the rhythm stuff in the head.
Okay, so you used the Cobra for the lead.
For the lead, right.
Okay, now that makes sense. But I love that. That rhythm is just a nice groove anyway. But now, that line, did you write that out for him, or did you just guys...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I had to write... I wrote out everything, and of course, by hand. I didn't do anything as far as engraving it and Sibelius or anything like that. So I had to write out all the... and transpose for the sax and everything else and for the trumpet and... So old school, I think I would do that differently now, but at that time I wrote everything by hand.
Okay, well, let me play, I think this is the one where you have the section, Fatster, the clip you gave me from that, Fatster. I'll play that real quick, and then I want to get in a little more, too. The reason I'm showing everybody these different clips is I want to kind of give them an idea where you're coming from so they can understand. We'll get more into the school that you founded and then into the thing that you're doing now with the Chief, because it's kind of it kind of leads up to that. So here's Fatster, and this I think is has the full brass in it. So take a listen. I presume that's the Anderson Cobra.
Yes, it is.
That's a great that's a great sounding guitar. And
I used a full tone. I forgot the pedal on it as far as the overdrive.
Oh, okay. Full tone, but you're using the custom audio,
right? Custom audio head. It's a different custom audio head. It's one that I was actually just borrowing before mine came in.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it is a custom audio head.
Yeah. No, that's a great brass arrangement. That's just really some really nice stuff. Great riffs. Yeah. And the way the interplay between the brass and the way you're filling in between, it worked really nicely.
That tune was probably, I think it was the first one that we kind of rehearsed to go through before we did this. So we weren't playing out at all. We just got together and I had these tunes and we just started rehearsing them. And we're in the studio maybe, you know, 2-3 weeks
mm-hmm.
and cut different parts and all different, I mean, we recorded a lot of it mainly right there in the studio, but other parts were recorded, some in an apartment. It was just crazy, all the different things we had to put together to make it happen.
Yeah.
With everybody's schedules.
Yeah, no, that I can imagine. The schedules are more of the problem. But right. Anyway, now, so let's talk a little bit about some of the other things. You had founded the Atlanta Institute of Music. So tell me a little bit about that and what that was about. Is that still around?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's still this great school. Basically, I started that in 1985 as a prep school for Musicians Institute. And I moved here, and basically it was a 3-month program. And soon I found out that, hey, people can't get a 3-month lease, an apartment. They don't want to come somewhere and stay 3 months. So I broke away from MI after about 6 months into it, and then added a base program. And then we added the other programs on top of that, but it extended it to a year. And so that's, that basically came from an idea of having this prep school. At the time, my mom, actually, she was sick. She had cancer, and I was trying to get back closer. So that's the whole reason I wanted to, come to Atlanta and do this. And my sister lived here. And so that's how AIM kind of got started. And it's where a lot of the titles from, like, Attack of the Flannel People, moving from Los Angeles to Atlanta was a big shocker. I knew I grew up in Tennessee, but when I moved here, it was just completely different than I expected. But yes. So I call them the Flannel People at that time. I'll probably get my butt kicked tomorrow when I go outside, but that's exactly what it's about. So.
Well, the thing is that what's interesting is, how do you prep for Musicians Institute? That's what I'm interested in. And, I mean, because most people just went there, but what was your approach? How did you look at Musicians Institute, and how did you – I mean, obviously you're looking that to get in a Musicians Institute, you had to be at a certain level. So what was your determination of that? I'm just trying to figure out how you –
Well, here's what happened is basically we – Pat Hicks was the owner of MI, and so we talked about it. And he goes, yeah, why don't we do this, and we'll get involved and do this and that. And so Steve Trovato wrote some of the curriculum. I can't remember who all – it's been so long ago. I can't remember everyone that was involved with writing it. But and it was only guitar at that time. So Steve actually also came and did, like, the orientation thing with me to get it kicked off. But to prep for MI, it was really kind of like the summer session, mainly thinking of it like the summer session, just basic learning your, pentatonic scales, play blues and that kind of, we didn't delve into a lot of stuff there at first. And then once we started growing the program, then it got more intense. And then we had, like, 4 different levels, and where we would have, rock performance class, jazz performance class. We'd have, fusion curriculum. We'd have ear training, reading, the whole bit. So it was, then we got it accredited, and I got it. I think it was in the early 90s. And I'm telling you, I would never, ever go through that again.
Yeah, accreditation's not easy.
No. And so, after doing that for so long and after the accreditation, it's just, I was doing so much clerical, like placement and follow up and the government stuff. It was just unbelievable, but nothing compared to what it is now. And I just at that time made the decision, I don't want to do this anymore. It really got away from the music, and I wanted to, get away from sitting behind the desk at that point. So.
It became more of an administrative job than actually a music job.
But I did sell it. I brought in a partner, and his name's Knight Driscoll, who still owns the school. But he came in the 90s, and this is a whole different story we could talk about some other time. But the whole, to get this thing accredited and what we had to go through and the lawsuits we had and everything we had to deal with was unbelievable. So it's I still keep in touch with Knight, of course, and I go to the school every now and then. And I was in a board of directors meeting with him just a few months ago, because we were at that time talking about putting Achieve Music Technology into the sight reading curriculum and starting that way. And so still plan to do that. So I do still stay in contact with everybody there. It moved, and it's in Duluth where I live. Before, I'd have to drive about 10 miles to get to it, but the school actually moved close to me, so I could just almost walk there now.
Oh, that's cool. Well, now let me ask you this. Was there an issue? I know, like, for examples, for medical schools or, other types of, especially colleges, accreditation differs from state to state. Was there any issue, if somebody went to your school and then went over to Guitar Institute, was there any issues? Did they lose units? It was pretty much a smooth transition?
Yeah, I think they were able to keep most. Again, that's been, oh my gosh, since the 90s. I can't remember exactly. I know we'd had some people transfer to go to Berkeley, of course. We had some going to MI. And at that time, MI, I think MMI was accredited, so I know that theory and a lot of the scales and technique classes and reading, so a lot of it they could test out of or was applied to their whatever school they were going to. I don't think there was any problems there.
Because I know, like, Berkeley was more of a formal school, like SC, so there were certain, they were much stricter in requirements, and you would lose units sometimes if you transferred from another school. Guitar Institute seemed a little looser because really it was, to me, and this is not in a demeaning way. It actually, to me, it was a more of a vocational school because when you came out of there, you were ready to work.
Is.
So it was
it
different. Whereas, you know, an SC, you get the degree. It was different. It was, and, you know, I assumed there would be more difficulty transferring from the Atlanta Institute to Berkeley in terms of, you know, not having to take extra classes because they just felt that you didn't have enough, you know, because a lot of times it was political. But, I mean, whereas the Guitar Institute would be a little more, because you could pretty much take what you wanted, if I'm correct.
Yeah, exactly.
You could really customize your program. That's which, to me, was one of the innovations, is you could really tweak what you really want to learn out of it, you know. Because at that time, I mean, besides the Guitar Institute, I think the only other major school that had anything contemporary was Dick Groves at the time. I think that was it. You know, until later, it was later when Duke had the studio guitar program at SC. There wasn't really anything, I think, significant. It was more classical guitar at the other school, like UCLA, or I think Cal State Fullerton was another music department. But it was more classically oriented. So it's kind of interesting.
Some competition. I mean, there was at that time, I forgot what, Music Tech it was called. And now I think it's McNally Smith School. But it's a whole different ballgame now. I mean, Ames going through their, you know, the bachelor's now, and it's they have, you know, horns, it's production, it's grown so much, but it's not as much on the music side. As far as musician side, there's not as many guitar, you know, bass players, drummers, vocalists. My vocalist, one of my vocalists, they did start that program, and it's doing very, very well from what Knight tells me, and it seems like that's what's hot all over the country pretty much. But yeah, and production, especially being in Atlanta, being like the hip hop era, you know, place that there's just not as much interest, it doesn't seem, in playing instruments as opposed to being, you know, producer or production and or singing. You know, mm-hmm. They also have brass now, so it's grown considerably, and it's a great school. And anybody that is interested in music career, I think that's a great option. They should check it out.
Yeah, no, and I'm glad it's growing. I think that's important right now, especially we're not seeing as much of people supporting the arts as much. And I think that it's good that it is. And it's good that there's the more people, the next of younger generations playing, the better. I think the more we have to have new blood, you know, it's for our survival. Now, let me ask you now, let's talk a little bit about the newest thing that you're doing, Achieve Music. And kind of explain this. I looked at the website, and there's all sorts of cool stuff in it. And I'll let you go into full explanation. But basically what I saw is a totally interactive online system for a teacher to interact with the student, if I'm correct. Because he can...
Yeah,
like,
that's a huge...
You can basically...
That's a huge part of it.
Okay, well, I'll let you explain it. So give us a breakdown of what it is.
Sure. It's basically an assessment app. It's designed for private music instructors and their students. It's it's fun to use for them to, you know, to want to practice. It's not a game, but it's, you know, it's really sophisticated app. It's powered by an algorithm called Match My Sound. Mm-hmm. And that actual algorithm is used through our partner, Music First, in the school systems now, with, you know, at least 80,000 students are using it as part of the music program. But what Achieve Music is the platform for private music instructors to take the same technology that they get to use in school systems and apply it to a private teaching situation. And it tells them, you know, it analyzes their pitch, their tempo, and their rhythm. And when they play directly into their iPhone, or it could be their Droid phone or tablet or whatever they have, and they don't need to have an interface or anything. They play into it, and it will tell them, give them graphically display, you know, where they have problems and, you know, where they've missed notes or where they've sped up, slowed down. It's really, really cool. And what I really like about it is that, especially for younger students, it's a way for parents to also look and see how their kids are doing, because everything's logged down, you know, on in just a dashboard where they can see every lesson that they've done. They can listen to it back. They can see where they've made their mistakes and how they progress. And then if they see, if the teacher can see these problems, they can intervene and make sure that, you know, the students are getting what they need to continue lessons, because so many guitar students quit, you know, after like 6 months. It's a huge thing. They just say, oh, it hurts my fingers, or, oh, you know, especially the big culprit these days, of course, is sports and things like that. So it has to be something that they have to, you know, have fun doing, and more like a game, is game-like, although, like I said, it's a serious app. It's not a game, but it is, has that kind of, you know, feel to it, where they're seeing the arrows and they're seeing the score and they're seeing, you know, that kind of.
So let me ask you to kind of get a feel of how this works. So you get the app. The app is free, right?
Or it's free? The app is free for music teachers completely. Yes,
But the it's a purchase for the student, right?
Yes, there's two different types of purchases. What I want to say before we go there is that the what's really great about the app is right now, you know, we have licensed books, Alfred and Mel Bay. All their books are on there right now. And of course, we have others coming soon that we'll announce at NAMM. But what I really like about it, and what most teachers should really like about it, is that you can upload your own lessons. If you create something in Sibelius or Finale or something, you can upload it and it immediately attaches our technology to it. So you can take whatever you've done and whatever you teach your student, and you can send it to them, and they get an email and it says, hey, your teacher has sent you this lesson to do. And then the student opens it up, works on it. You can, as a teacher, you can see the attempts they've made. You can see how well they're doing, and they submit the lesson back to you when they're done.
Right.
You set a specific goal for them. They cannot go to the next level until they reach that goal. I was at NAMM here this summer, and I'm getting these dings on my phone, and I'm looking, oh, there's, you know, a few of my students, and I see what they've done, make sure that they're practicing. So there's two different types of student plans as far as payment plans. It's a monthly subscription of $2.95 a month for the curriculum that would just be teacher-based, anything it's free curriculum. I can't think of it right now since it's so late, but just free stuff. Anybody that wants to put on their own information up there is free to, you know, for students to use. It's $2.95 subscription. But if they use all the books that are on there, then it's a $4.95 subscription per month. And that's for everything that's on the app, whether it's, you know, the books, they can go from any book that they'd like, or whatever their teacher puts up there. So they have complete access to everything for $4.95 a month.
Now, what I wanted to understand is, so basically, mm-hmm. Now, if I'm a student and I'm going to take a lesson with you, and you're okay, so I get the $4.95 because I want to use the books and stuff. Now, is it real time where we actually have a lesson together and then you're watching me real time play it? How does that work?
Oh,
you see the music. So
no,
you know,
right. The actual lesson, the way I use it for some of my students is I'll use it in the lesson to once we might go over some things, and then I will do the assignment there, send it to them so they know what they have to work on. So they work on it at home, and while they're working on it, I can look on the dashboard and see how they're doing. I can actually listen to anything that they've done and see.
So they plug
their
guitar into the app. What I'm asking is because because it shows that you do, like, you can say, well, you slowed down here, you missed this note here.
Yeah.
How do you see that or hear that?
Yeah, you log right into, to where you can see to their all of the things that they have done, their dashboard. So you can.
Okay, so when they're using the app, they're playing into the app. So there's audio or something? Oh, okay, that's what I'm trying to understand. So
right.
You'll give them an assignment, they'll go play it, and in the app they record it so you can go back and listen to the performance and then say, yeah, you needed to work on this and this was not right or this needs to be pulled up or that's what I'm saying. So, which is interesting.
Yeah, so
it's totally interactive.
Exactly. It's very interactive, and it and what I like is when a student comes in, it's like, oh, how did you do this week? You know, you can open up the app and see if there's any problems. You know exactly what the student needs to work on.
Right.
So that's what I really like about it. Not so much that you're going to be every day looking at your student, but you know, some teachers, you know, might have 10 students and they might be able to do that. But I mean, if you've got 50, 60 students that you're teaching, to stay in touch every day with all of them is not that, you know, really that possible. Unless you really don't have a life.
Right. But the really cool thing is that, you know, I remember I started on Mel Bay. I still have my old Mel Bay. I hope they're collector's items. But I have old Mel Bay books. But the thing is the books are expensive. For $4.95 a month, that's really not that bad considering all the music that you have. So, you know, so working with a teacher, it's all available for you there. And then you can move around and between Alfred and Mel Bay, that's a pretty large library.
Yeah, again, we're getting other stuff in very soon, but there is a lot of stuff on there, and we add. I mean, what's crazy is to get that into our system, how it has to be done. Tish is our information technology person at Achieve Music, and she's a classical guitar player, and she's, you know, a trained musician and plays bass, everything else, but she has to bring all this stuff into the system. And a lot of, especially Mel Bay or some of the Alfred stuff, might not be engraved already in Sibelius or any type of a digital software. And so it's like PDFs. And so you're having to write all this crap out again. So there's probably 50 books on there right now. And of course, there's more that's being added, but it's a process. Once this stuff gets going, it's just depends on how they originally, like you said, Mel Bay. I started Mel Bay when I was probably 8 years old, and that's, you know, 70 years, a long time ago.
So. Yeah. No, but and then the fact that you can import, because there's a lot of transcriptions and stuff that you probably have. And I know that, a lot of the other guys that you were mentioning from your associates from Guitar Institute, too, it's a great way to, because that's, you can really go in the depth. I mean, this is beyond just regular, simple guitar. You could literally, I mean, classical guitar teachers, this is a great way to do analysis. I mean, there's a video. If you go on to achievemusic.com, you can play the video, and it shows what the capabilities are. It shows them, you know, you're listening like if you were the teacher and you're hearing the guy play and the music's up there. And he's making notes and stuff like that. It's really interactive, and I think that's quite powerful because it's nice. You can do it at your time. You can set, you can assign it, and then come back when you're ready, and then go back and forth like that. I think that's great. And the fact that it's all online, you don't even have to be in the same state, which is kind of interesting.
No, you don't. I mean, what we haven't even talked about is the app also has a lot of different features within it. I mean, it's got a slow down feature to where, you know, you can slow things down, I think, way even like over 50%. I think it's, really, really slow. So a student can build up, you know, to whatever their teacher has set for a score goal by slowing it down and practicing along with it. Teachers can actually mark sections that they want the students to work on, and so they'll just kind of loops and they kind of work on that. So there's a lot of those kind of features in the options bar there that you can look at as well. And the best thing anybody could do if you're a teacher is just go to the app store, download it for free, and start experimenting with it, because you can look and see the all of the books that are on there. Now, if a teacher's going to upload something, that needs to be done from their computer. But once it's uploaded, they can assign and use it, you know, from their phone or for iPad or whatever they want to do. So, and you can upload MP3s. You can upload PDFs. There's just so much that you can do with this thing that's it just takes checking it out. And again, it's free. And we also have a lot of membership benefits that we're putting together. A lot of stuff's going to roll out mid-September. I know Sweetwater is coming on board and give our memberships a discount on, you know, gear or any kind of music merchandise. We're going to have others coming in that I'm not mentioning right now, but we do have a lot of benefits for instructors that's free just for joining the app, you know, just being part of the app. Yeah. So it's definitely worth checking out. And I tell you, if you get used to writing your own stuff and putting up there, it's kind of addictive. I think I really like doing that. That's one thing I've always enjoyed doing is putting curriculum together. It's just something that I've always enjoyed. It's kind of like mini composing, you know, whether it's lines or whether it's, instructional stuff. I mean, it's just cool. Right. I like writing things like that. And so it's a real fun environment for me.
Now, all of your books are in it, right? Because you're published,
no,
too.
Unfortunately not, because, actually, the Fusion book that I did was with Warner Brothers, and I think they sold – so Alfred, I think, has it now, so hopefully that's going to be coming up. I have my other books with Hal Leonard that are there now. Hopefully that'll be coming to us.
You have Jazz Rock and Jazz Prolix series. Fusion right. Guitar is the Warner Brothers one, and then Rock Solid Guitar. And
that's the Carl Fisher one, right.
Yeah, I mean, that's cool books. I mean, those would be cool. You need to get Steve Trovato's stuff in there too.
Well, Steve's I'm always talking to Steve. He's actually on the site. He's checked it out, and so he's I guess, and
he's got a lot of really cool stuff. There, yeah, so. we're supposed to have him on to talk about one of his blues courses that he has. So yeah, and he's got some cool stuff.
Steve's awesome.
Yeah,
I mean, all those guys at MI were just killer players. But that was Steve at USC when you were there, or was that way before?
No, I was the old school. I was when Duke was there. So
gotcha.
I'm an old guy. I live in Leisure World. No, I'm just kidding. But I just did. I was the first studio guitar graduate. So I was the first one to graduate.
One thing that I need to mention too is there. See, this technology has been just recently developed. No one else has
polyphonic technology. No, that's amazing.
So for piano, this isn't just guitar. Of course, it's piano, it's vocal, it's keyboard. I mean, it's everything. The only thing yet that they are working on is the rhythmic for percussion. But, you know, it could be a choral arrangement. It could be anything to put into this system. So it's not just guitar related. I just happen to play guitar. I wish I played other instruments too, but I'm one of those guys that only plays one, unfortunately.
But I mean, this the interactive the aspect of it is just amazing. It's funny because I all the people that I've seen that I've talked to that have come out of Guitar Institute are like the most innovative. Everybody's programs are just amazing. I mean, they're doing amazing things, and this thing is awesome. I mean, the power of it, of how you can, you know, what you can do with the student and what you're able to do, not being in the room with them, is just awesome. I mean,
well, the whole app. I mean, how this got started is there's Margus Nitsu is a mathematician. He actually had a PhD in theoretical cryptology, I think, or it's too late, but he is a brilliant guy. He's in Estonia, and he's the creator of the technology. And then Kristo Keo, a classical guitarist in Estonia, is just amazing player that's part of this whole thing. And he's those two together just came up with this technology and this platform. And how this happened is Dave Smallover, if you're old school, so you'll remember this as well. You remember all the National Guitar Summer Workshops, and Steve I used to do them, and Robin Ford, all these people. But Dave actually, he was the CEO of all that, right? So he did that, Day Jams, Workshop Live, all that were Dave's educational programs. And through Alfred, I think he published over 450 books. So when he met, I can't remember how they met, but they kind of started putting things together. Hey, we need to get this into the music notation world here in the States, because, and I believe at that time it was only an audio match my sound, my audio. Notation wasn't part of it. And so when they met, this is how the whole company came together. And I've known Dave for many, many, many years. I started Day Jams in Atlanta for him, and I was going to be his director for Day Jams, or national director up there. I went up to Connecticut twice. Sorry, I turned him down twice because it's just too damn cold.
Yeah.
I couldn't deal with the weather. But Dave is, you know, he's an educator, and that's what I really like about it. This whole thing is, you've got educators involved with this. This isn't somebody that's throwing up an app for fun or just to make money.
It's
thought that goes into this, and we really give a shit about where this goes and what kids learn. And that's why it's free for teachers too. That's why it's a.
It's truly powerful, and mention to the creator too. I think that. What I see in the future is eventually you can, besides just the separate instruments, if you do multiple staffs, I mean, this could be a very powerful tool for orchestration and theory.
We actually, it's now too, for big band. I mean, we are not big band. I'm thinking jazz, a marching band, and marching band. So there's a couple of schools that they're
very
working,
cool. Then you're already there. Yeah.
Now.
Well, we're out of time. I told you it'd go by fast.
Wow, it went by fast.
It just flew. And I want to thank you. Now, I want to mention www.achievemusic.com. And if you guys are guitar teachers out there, or even just students, check this out. This is pretty cool. This is a really powerful system. Also, too, I have to mention www.stevefreemanguitarist.com. And that's where you'll find his Surfside, though it's on Amazon, so you.
Well, I can also, if somebody wants to write me, I've got physical copies here because the Abstract Logic stopped selling those, so they sent me a lot of mine back. So, or iTunes, they can go.
I'm going to have to get one from you. I want to sign one from you. You know that.
I'll send one to you tomorrow.
Okay, that's a deal. But the www.stevefreemanguitarist.com. Check out what he's doing, because besides all the education thing that he does. He's a great guitarist, and look, and you got to post a picture of this Cobra, this Tom Amberson Cobra. I want to see that.
Okay, I'll do that.
So everybody, also too, I just want to mention again, thank you, Monique, for introducing me to Steve. This is a killer show. I'm really excited about this program. I think this thing is really, really good. Now, what I'm going to do to take us out is I pulled a clip from him from a song called Stephanie's Groove. And this is a good, he does a couple of leads. He does a first little lead, and then there's like an organ thing or something, or synth thing, and then it goes into this full blowout. So what better way to take us out than just some blazing guitar work? So thank you again. Stay on the line until after we're off the air. I just want to talk to you briefly. And everybody, check out this album, Surfside, from him. It's a killer album. If you like fusion, you're going to like this album. And I will see you next week. Steve, again, I can't thank you so much.
Hey, thank you, Jeff. And thanks again, Monique. I appreciate it. I hope to see you at NAMM.
Yes. Well, you'll be at NAMM, Winter NAMM?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we'll all get together. We have to definitely all get together and meet over there.
We will.
Okay. So this is Stephanie's Groove. Everybody have a great week. We'll see you next week.